Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to Intercepted. I'm Justice Mosqueda, and I'm joined here by Niners Nation Kyle Posey, a very special man to me. Say what's up to the people, Kyle.
Yo, what's going on, man? We meet again. How you doing?
We sure do. Do you remember how we met or how it finished last time? The last time the Packers and Niners went against each other.
I did watch the game, and it was not great. It was an entertaining game, but I mean, typical. It was really just typical for the 49ers to find a way to blow it at the end.
Last second field goal by Mason Crosby, who before then and since then has had some hiccups in special teams wise.
Some hiccups, huh?
Yeah, a couple. A lot of people are saying. But the play leading up to that field goal kick was, you know, Davante Adams over the middle. The Green Bay Packers get on the ball fast enough to spike it. And lo and behold, what happened this past weekend? Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy already threw Dak Prescott under the bus and said Dak made the check, but it was the right call. They run a quarterback draw with 12 seconds left. Can't get a backup on the ball to spike it with enough time to actually run a Hail Mary play. And the 49ers win. Today, LaFleur said, basically, we're recording this on a Thursday. LaFleur basically said, like, we'd been practicing, you know, getting ready for the San Francisco 49ers during the bye week. We just kind of had a hunch that Shanahan was going to win that one. So way to give credit to Shanahan and, you know, your former boss, right, while also just like kicking McCarthy out the door fully.
So much shade in that comment altogether, man. And Kyle was actually asked about that, like how his relationship is with LaFleur, because for whatever reason, you know, people are still talking about that week three handshake gate at the end when Kyle kind of brushed it off. But he pretty much said, I was just caught up in the moment, man. That's my boy. And I mean, just going back to what you said, there was really no reason for LaFleur to bring up McCarthy or just the game in general. But for him to say that just tells you, you know, what the perception is about good old Mike, your boy, of course.
My boy. I love to bet against him. I will say that in important spots. Leaves to mind you is the Dallas Cowboys that were, I think they were the best against the spread team during the regular season. So choke when it matters. I love it. LaFleur also, you know, had been asked those type of questions about Shanahan. And he basically was like, you know how much that dude's done for my family? Like, it's crazy that you guys are asking me these questions. Like, he hired my brother as the offensive coordinator. And then, you know, his brother, you know, now bounced with Salah, who, you know, everyone talks about, you know, him being the best man in Salah's wedding. Like, every dude that, like, LaFleur is connected with, like, Kyle Shanahan's been nothing but great to him. I feel like the only thing that may have rubbed the relationship wrong is, like, why are you texting my quarterback on draft day? what are you doing texting my MVP quarterback on draft day?
Gonna need him, so leave him alone and leave us alone.
Yeah. How dare you? Don't ever look at my son again. What is kind of, because Packers fans, I feel like playoff anxiety has finally hit Packers fans where they're just kind of scared of everything right now. Like everyone's like, oh, the Niners, I didn't like the Niners pool. It's like every other team in the playoffs has a better quarterback. So, you know, now is not the time to really complain about kind of your pool. Like, you got a bye week, you advance to the next round. You didn't lose like the Dallas Cowboys in embarrassing fashion. But then there's the other side where it's like, this feels like our year. Like, everyone is getting healthy at the right time. There's really not that big, like, the biggest weakness on the offensive side of the ball is like tight end, and Mercedes Lewis is a great run blocking tight end. The weakest spot, I guess, now with Kingsley Keke being released, and we'll talk about that a little bit, at least in the nickel look, which is probably what they're going to be in most of the game, like Darnell Savage might be their worst starter, and Darnell Savage is a pretty damn good football player. So kind of where are 49ers fans coming into this week?
So they're confident, and I mean, they have good reason to be, just because a lot of times when you bring up, you know, this matchup, 49ers Packers, you're going to forget, you know, week three, you're going to forget 2000. You're going to remember what you want to remember. You're going to remember Raheem Mostert running for 200 yards. You're going to remember the 2019, you know, the good days, the Colin Kaepernick days when, you know, he's running all over Green Bay. So I think that matchup, knowing that the 49ers will probably be able to have a little bit of success on the ground. And then, of course, what's just recently happened. So the Cowboys game, the game was close at the end. But, I mean, in their minds, you know, 49ers fans are thinking, we went on the road and we won and we dominated. And the only real reason it was close is just because the typical hiccups that, you know, we tend to have every game. And then the second half before that against the Rams, scored 24 points and a half against the Rams. And, you know, pretty much shut down a really potent offense. So the confidence is sky high, and I understand why. But, you know, going on the road, Aaron Rodgers, you just mentioned, like, they legitimately are the one seed. And they're, I mean, look at the other conference. You can poke a lot of holes in a lot of high seeds. But when it comes to the Packers, I mean, you really have to reach when you're coming to – or I guess when you're looking at their team and thinking, you know, are they really legit or not?
I feel like the X factor in this game up front is, one, you should be paying attention to weather at this point in the season, right? Especially if you're gambling on these games and stuff. Aaron Rodgers is something like he covers 2/3 of the time against the spread, you know, in freezing conditions. Jimmy Garoppolo has never played a game in freezing conditions, which is amazing when you think about, like, he's been in the, I mean, he's like 30 years old, right? And he played in New England. You would think he would have had at least one. You know, Garoppolo. So let's start with the quarterbacks. Garoppolo didn't look good the second half of that game. They had built up a multi-score lead, you know, against Dallas by the time that he really, you know, quote unquote, got dinged up. And who knows what's the truth there when Kyle Shanahan is saying, like, he didn't, you know, he's not hurt. It didn't impact any ball. And Jimmy Garoppolo's out there saying, you know, which one hurts worse, your shoulder or your hand? And he says, yes. And then he says, you know, it impacted every throw. The second half against Dallas, he didn't look very good. I'm looking at the numbers right now. He threw 10 times for 5 completions, 39 yards, and an interception in the second half against Dallas. And he got dinged up in the second quarter, I guess. What are we expecting from him? Because, you know, at the beginning, there were rumors, you know, early on this week that Garoppolo might not even start because of how dinged up he was. And then that quickly, you know, got pulled. And, you know, you see him throwing at practice. He was a full participant today, not even listed on the injury report in terms of his status. So he 100% is going to start. The question now is just, like, what is it going to look like with injured Jimmy Garoppolo starting?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, how effective is his shoulder? He was driven into the ground on his shoulder, on his throwing shoulder. I imagine it's going to be a lot of the same. So they're going to do what they can to, quote unquote, hide him. And when I say that, I mean, for whatever reason, when you watch him play, like, he comes out of the gate swinging, like, they look really good on their first drives. And for the most part, in 2-minute and late game situations, they look really good as well. But it's everything in between where you're not really sure what you're going to get with Jimmy. And that's where we see a lot of times when you look at his throwing charts, there's not a lot of things outside of the numbers. A lot of it is just play action. They're trying to confuse the defense on one side to make the reads simpler for Jimmy. Based on how the Packers line up, and I'm sure we're going to get into this, I imagine they're going to do a lot of what they usually do. So just, you know, backside slants, play action, try to get the linebackers to suck up. That way, there are defined windows for Jimmy to throw to. This is probably a good question for you. So how much does Joe Barry confuse on the back end? Because what Mike Vrabel did a few weeks back is, you know, he's not just going to run simple spot drop stuff. He's not going to just give you a man coverage look. He's going to drop a guy down from one side to the other. And when that happens, especially for Jimmy, you know, when he has to go from one side of the field to the other, bad things happen. And usually when you do, how that happens is you're able to, you know, just confuse on the back end. So, well, we see a lot of that. And I guess that's going to be your answer to what version of Jimmy we'll get.
Yeah, I mean, they play a lot of match, especially, you know, quarters type of match stuff, you know, for an NFL team, at least. I mean, you sure see it a whole lot more at the college level, but they do confuse guys. I mean, you got to remember that interception against Green Bay the first time around. Jair Alexander comes all the way across the field pick it off, you know, that I think it was to Kittle, you know, over the middle, and he high points it and he beats him there, so. I do think that kind of does disrupt some stuff when it's not just like field reads. Like I'm reading grass when it's like actual pure progression stuff, which is like what a lot of these West Coast guys want to run. Doesn't really work against match coverage because you end up being like, well, that was man. So where's my man beater? And you're like, that wasn't man. Oh, okay. You're just playing really tight coverage, you know? Packers call it sticky coverage if you ever hear them talking press conferences and stuff. But yeah, I just don't know. I feel like we have to see at least a little bit of Trey Lance at this game, right? They have to be running some sort of packages for him. I think he ran, what, maybe 2-3 plays against Green Bay the first time around. He got that rushing touchdown behind Trent Williams where they just ran that pin and pull near the goal line, and Trent Williams was like, yep, me against the corner. I'm putting him in the dirt.
It's interesting that you say that because Jimmy Ward was on Matt Maiocco, like NBC Sports. He's like Mr. 49er, beat writer. Jimmy Ward was interviewing him, and Jimmy Ward's the free safety on the defense, and he was hyping Trey up out about how he's, you know, making the defense work in practice. But he said, I think Trey's got to get his reps, and that came out of nowhere. And then he was talking about just the challenges he presents to a defense. I mean, it goes without saying, rocket arm, guy who can run around a little bit, extend plays. So you would think, especially if Jimmy's shoulder's hurting him, especially if this is a scenario where he's not 100% and he can't make the throws down the field. So you brought up the Cowboys game in the second half. What happened was when he's having to push the ball outside the numbers, he's kind of babying it. He's kind of aiming it because he can't put everything into the throw. So, I mean, if you can't get – if your quarterback isn't 100% effective, there's another quarterback that you have who is, and he's healthy. And you have – Green Bay really doesn't have anything to go off of. Like, are you going to really rely on what you saw in the Texans game? Probably not. So, you would think it's a nice little opportunity for Shanahan to throw a curveball at him. But at the same time, you don't want to disrupt your offense. And I feel like that was what, you know, was hurting the 49ers earlier on in the season. That's why we really stopped seeing Trey Lance afterward.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point of throwing outside of the numbers, even when he's on the move, right? That interception that he threw against Dallas, where you're like, why did that ball go there? Like, that didn't look right. It's just like
a healthy person.
Yeah. You're like, an NFL quarterback should be able to complete that. And, you know, if you do stack the box, you can throw, but if you're not going to take shot plays outside, which is not really what Jimmy Garoppolo does, the way you do it, it was with a moving pocket, right? So he's still going to have to run and throw on the move to be able to hit those balls outside of the numbers. So that's something to watch out for. Green Bay side of the ball at quarterback, it's Aaron Rodgers. It's Aaron Rodgers, baby.
Not bad.
MVP. I saw someone said that they were going to give their vote for the Pro Football Writers of America MVP to Cooper Kupp. That's offensive. We don't have to pretend Cooper Kupp was that guy. Come on.
So I have a vote for PFWA and I voted for Tom Brady. How's that make you feel?
Why'd you vote for Brady?
Because he's not Aaron Rodgers.
Wow. Agenda. Hashtag agenda. Hashtag agenda. Let's talk about these running backs. Obviously, like, the big difference here is Trey Sermon isn't going to start this game for the 49ers, which is what they got in the first matchup. Elijah Mitchell, who's one of my favorite guys coming out in the draft. I love ULL's offense in general. I like Levi Lewis, the quarterback that they have coming out. He's a little bit of a smaller guy, but I think he could be kind of like that Tyrod Taylor type of career trajectory type of thing. He has speed, and he can get to the edge. And with how not weak, but shallow their, you know, outside linebacker depth is, where right now, as it stands right now, is Rashawn Gary's probably going to be coming from the defense's left and then pressing from the right. And then if they have to sub, if these guys don't come off of IR on Friday, then it's going to be, you know, Tipa Galea, who's 229 pounds, setting the edge. You can run outside zone on him when George Kittle is, you know, asked to do that reach block as a tight end. If you can get Mitchell on the edge, that worries me a ton. Plus the fact that you have Deebo Samuel, and they weren't really doing the same stuff with Deebo, you know, in week three that they're doing right now. So
not even close.
The backfield is kind of really what worries me about this team, at least offensively.
So you mentioned Elijah Mitchell. So he had 27 carries. It seems like whenever they get him the ball, obviously, first of all, the analytics crowd, when they talk about number of carries, and then you hear the players talk about it. So every time, even Eric Armstead last week, he said when Zeke has a certain number of carries, they are 1-5. And we did that today. And they always talk about that. And I know that there's a cause and correlation thing, but I really feel like it matters, at least for the coaches. But back to just Elijah Mitchell. He's actually much better going up the middle. I feel like he's gotten a lot better just as far as patience, knowing where to go, knowing when to hit his spots. Earlier on in the season, he's just, so you mentioned his speed. He knows he's fast, and he would just run up into the offensive linemen's backs, probably miss a cutback lane this year. And we saw it more so last game. He's just slow to fast through. Like, he's not doing that anymore. And he's hitting these big running lanes. And you mentioned Deebo as well. So they're also able to use Deebo as a counter now that Elijah Mitchell is progressing as a runner. So that 1-2 punch in the backfield, like those are the only two guys you're going to have to worry about. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if we see Deebo get, you know, upwards to 10 to 15 carries and just go back and forth between those two. Sealing the Packers will be the key to the victory here. Like they're obviously going to run the ball. They're going to go out of their way to run the ball. If they can, you mentioned, you know, scooping. If that's where they really hurt Dallas is, you know, getting Trent Williams from the first level, and now he's getting a free running start of your linebacker. Good luck with that, man. And then, you know, their edge guys, even their backup tight ends are pretty serviceable blockers. So if they're able to seal the edge for the Packers, I think, you know, we're going to see a lot of yards, especially from Mitchell and Deebo.
Yeah, and offensive line-wise, I thought Tom Compton had been doing a better job than I really expected. The drop-off from McGlinchey to Compton isn't as big as I would have thought. And
it's true.
I kind of wonder if – are you guys going to pay McGlinchey? Because McGlinchey kind of feels like that Jake Matthews. Like, he's not bad, and he has a high pedigree. Like, he came out as a first-round pick, and he's an NFL starter. So someone's going to pay him a ton of money just because of that background. But I don't know how good he was, because Compton could come in and basically replace him instantly.
He's like a serviceable, better than serviceable, competent, good player, Mike McGlinchey. But when he's been out, since he's been out of the lineup, like there's been no change. They've been able to run the ball just as effectively. They've been able to get passing plays down the field. Jimmy Garoppolo is not getting sacked. So I think the value, and I don't want to get into like right tackle, left tackle, or just offensive line in general, but just the value of an offensive lineman, I feel like we're seeing, maybe that's just minimized in a Shanahan offense, but yeah, there really hasn't been a drop off. It sticks out when it's like a sore thumb when an offensive lineman gives up a sack. And because you don't know the name Tom Compton, you're not familiar with it, it's easy to pick on him. But if you look at like their blown block rates or just the sacks given up, the pressures, it's you would think that they're the same person. So I think it's probably more of a credit to Shanahan than anything.
Brunskill, the right guard, is the guy to worry about if you're a Niners fan. And I noticed against Dallas, you know, the crowd starts getting involved. You want Alex Mack having his eyes up, because I guess Alex Mack must be doing all the protections and stuff, you know, in that type of situation, because Brunskill is the guy looking back to Jimmy Garoppolo and punching, you know, Alex Mack on the hip to let him know it's time to go. That's weird to me, because Brunskill then has the lowest time to react of any offensive lineman, and he's probably the weakest offensive lineman of that bunch. That's the one where I'm like, you could take advantage of that situation. I mean, you only have to go back to the last matchup of the Packers and the Niners to pull up the Kenny Clark versus Daniel Brunskill tape. And it's demoralizing for Niners fans, I would think.
It's not great.
Yeah, it's bad. Wide receiver-wise, Brandon Ayuk, officially out of the doghouse. What's the ruling here?
He's been coming along strong, man. So he looks like a legit number one wide receiver. They're using him like that. It's crazy what happens when you let the talented person run routes and actually throw him the ball. So he's running a lot of isolated routes, and that's been new. The 49ers really haven't used that much, but we saw it a little bit in the Rams game where they're just running like backside glances, like backside five-step slants, I guess I should say, or just isolated routes where you saw Trayvon Diggs, he's running a blaze out like the Julio route where you run up, fake like you're going inside and cut it back to the outside. So I think that just tells you the type of progression that Brandon Ayuk's having. So having to do three threats, Ayuk, Deebo, and Kittle, like three legitimate threats to go along with their slot receivers, has been a long way. But I don't think without the emergence of Brandon Ayuk late in the season, they're not able to move around Deebo and use him like a running back or even keep Kittle in to block, which is what they do a lot as well.
No, I agree. And Ayuk had a half-decent game against the Packers the first time around, and that was the one where everyone thought, oh, okay, he's finally getting involved. And then it took like another month for him to fully, you know, work out of that doghouse. Rodgers was pretty vocal about liking Ayuk and liking Justin Jefferson. And those are looking good. General manager Aaron Rodgers has got some hits under his belt.
Does he really get credit for saying two guys who are very high athletes who can catch the ball and run really, really fast, we're going to be good? But no, I mean, like what's going on with the Packers wide receiver group? Because it looks like MVS is not going to play. That's wide receiver three, right? So a lot of teams, I mean, we saw people are asking, you know, are they going to double team Devontae Adams? Are they going
to
go wing
Martindale? They have to.
But without a guy like MVS, maybe, you know, the lack of speed gives you an opportunity to do that. So what's going on with the Packers wide receiver core?
Yeah, so The big thing is Marquez Valdes-Scantling has that back injury. He was able to practice on Tuesday. He wasn't able to practice on Wednesday or Thursday. They're not going to have a Friday practice because it's a Saturday game. They listed him as doubtful for the game, so I would anticipate him not playing. Alan Lazard has really stepped up, you know, with MVS dealing with everything that he's had to deal with between COVID and getting hurt multiple times this season. And then Randall Cobb just came off of the injured reserve list. So that's a huge thing. I mean, Randall Cobb really, until he got hurt against the Rams, he was like Mr. Third Down for the Packers. Like outside of Devontae, the other guy that you could count on really was Randall Cobb on third downs, just being able to eat stuff underneath the middle. And Lazard, for, you know, being a big guy who is not necessarily fast, is sure running a lot of stuff across the middle because you kind of have to treat him like a tight end. The way that he's able to like match up in the run game, a lot of teams will just be a little bit heavier than you usually would be. And then you end up with two heavy personnel, you know, Alan Lazard running across over the middle and Aaron Rodgers has pinpoint accuracy and you already doubled Davante Adams. So you're just out of numbers. You know what I mean? So I would say that that's kind of the way that it'll go. If MVS can't play, I will say, you'll probably see a little bit of Equanimeous St. Brown in this game because I don't think that they would activate Randall Cobb on Thursday and then have him play damn near every snap on a Saturday, right? Like he's not taking every number three wide receiver snap on Saturday. So Equanimeous St. Brown's going to get involved. He's kind of like their jet end around type of guy. So if Valdes-Scantling can't go, it's going to be him.
Does Aaron trust him?
Which one?
Same Brown. fair question. So MVS is what I read is he tried to push it with his back on Monday. Mm-hmm. Nothing really happened since then. And as you said, even if he does play, the odds with you not practicing all week and being full going to the game, just not high at all. So if St. Brown is going to be the guy, if he's going to be the shot guy down the field, does Aaron trust him to make a play?
He's thrown to him a couple of times. I still think they're going to try to get Devontae like activated very early. It's something that Rodgers has talked about a lot. They're kind of the opposite of the Niners, right? Where you talked about the Niners and they looked great that first drive against the Dallas Cowboys. And then they had one more touchdown the entire game. And it was that, you know, off of interception that got them starting that drive at like the 30 yard line. The Packers have been a team that have been terrible on the first drive. And then they get very good down the stretch. I think they've been outscored by like 38 points or something in the first quarter. And then they lead the league second through fourth quarters. So
I feel like that was last year too. It's under LaFleur in general.
It's very weird. I don't know if it's like him just being a little bit too conservative or what. It's not like they're really running that different of plays. But Rodgers has talked about recently, like that first drive, he's trying to get the ball in Devontae's hands some way. Like he wants to get him going like early on. He doesn't want Devontae being kind of just like, all right, you took him away. No, you gotta kick that door open when they try to close it type of thing. So I would assume they're going to figure some sort of way to get Devontae at least a look on something, you know, beyond the sticks in that first drive. Offensive line-wise, David Bakhtiari at left tackle. He is listed as questionable. He did not practice on Thursday. He did not practice on Tuesday. He did practice on Wednesday. They're saying it's a load management thing. I kind of think it's like almost a half mental thing with him. He pulled himself out of the game against the Detroit Lions in the season finale before, you know, the starter swapped out and all that stuff. He only played that game because Aaron Rodgers like texted him on that Wednesday and was like, no, we like need you to get a look before we go into playoff mode. So Bach didn't even think he was going to go. It's been a full year now since his ACL injury. We're seeing guys like Cam Akers come back from Achilles injuries like it's nothing in the same year, which is nuts to me. I kind of think something's going on mentally there. Not to say, you know, one way or another, it's just it is what it is, right? And you know, the mental part of injuries too is a very underrated aspect of being able to the whole rehab and recovery process. Everyone else on the offensive line should be able to go. So it should be, you know, Josh Runyon at left guard, Josh Myers at center, Lucas Patrick at right guard, and then Billy Turner at right tackle. There's some questions about, you know, if Lucas Patrick is one of their best five and, you know, should they kick Billy Turner into guard and have Dennis Kelly come off the bench. Doesn't seem like there's any indication by the team that they're going to move in that direction. And then, you know, the tight ends and running backs they're just healthy. And AJ Dillon, cold weather. That's going to be fun. He's 250 pounds, KP. Warner better tape up his ankles three times.
So probably the strength, and I mean, the strength is on this defense is the front seven. And it's not just because they have a bunch of good players. I feel like it's their mentality. So if you watch them, if you watch the linebackers fill and fold, so if you watch the guy who is opposite of Fred Warner, he's just going to run full speed into the line, basically with no recollection for his body. He's going to be reckless as hell, and it works. And I think that mindset, that mentality that they have with Dre Greenlaw and Aziz Alshire, their other linebackers, really set the tone and the physicality for them. So that'll be an interesting matchup to watch, just to see a guy like AJ Dillon, who is a big bruiser, but who's also a good athlete. Like, when people say that he's big, you think he's like a plotter, and I don't feel like you get that. No. I don't feel like
he can catch balls. Dillon. Yeah, he can catch balls. He can go vertical downfield and catch a ball with one hand, and you're like, dang, that guy should not be able to do that.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't take him off the field, but there's also Aaron Jones, too, who can do the same thing. So I feel like they do present matchup problems in that sense, but at the same time, 49ers are so athletic and so physical that they're able to shut you down in ways that most defenses aren't. So I'm interested to see how the Packers do attack. I know the last time they played, they had a lot of success out of the slot, and that's probably the 49ers' weakness when K'Wan Williams is their slot cornerback. Very good run player, very good against as a blitzer. But when you isolate him one-on-one, they did it last game, and Lazard caught a slot fade. Amari Cooper last game, slot TD. So he's not really a guy who can turn and run, and it's really tough to, you know, hide your slot cornerback when you can't do that.
Let's go to break, and then we'll come back and talk about the defense, special teams, and get into predictions. And we're back. All right, so the story of the defensive side of the ball, I think, in terms of the storylines leading up to this week, is defensive end Nick Bosa has a concussion, pretty brutal hit, frankly, in that Dallas Cowboys game. You know, Shanahan is like, might be pro injury. He might be our only pro injury NFL coach. He's basically like, yeah, it's looking good that he's going to play. They listed him as questionable. I don't think he's practiced. Is that correct?
No, so he's been listed as limited, but I don't think so either. And I think it really comes down to them being on a short week. So having, you know, being concussed on a Sunday and having.
Right, he's going to have to fly out on a Friday. Yeah. He's going to fly out on a Friday. It's an away game, too.
Right. I think I want to say they're leaving today, so which is even worse.
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, can you fly on a plane with a concussion? I feel like that's probably changing, like, altitude and pressure and stuff like that is probably not the way to handle it. But the NFL is in, like, full-blown we don't care mode is probably the best way to describe it. I mean, Bosa is going to have that quick turnaround on a concussion. No one has gotten, like, on the COVID list in, like, 2 weeks, which is very suspect. Even, you know, they're still doing random testing and stuff like that. So it's not even necessarily players not reporting it themselves. They got to be doing random testing, unless everyone's already tested positive for this thing and it's just spread through the NFL like wildfire. Everyone's already built up immunity and all that. I don't know. Doesn't make much sense to me, but you were talking before the break, this defensive front, Eric Armstead, I know he's moved to defensive tackle full time, and you know, he's looked really good since, I think it was what, week 8 or something like that. DJ Jones is a player. Samson Ibukam's a player. Arden Key, Jordan Willis, Maurice Hurst, Contavious Street.
Kevin Dins is pretty good too, for what it's worth.
Yeah, all those guys can play. Charles Omenihu was asked like a couple days ago, like, what's the difference between Houston and San Francisco? He's like, yeah, like, it's not a circus here. It's like, okay. Yeah, I mean, you guys might have, if the Packers had this much depth on the defensive line, no one would be able to stop them. No one. You guys might have the deepest in terms of just like the third guy, you're like the third line of the depth chart. That guy's like an actual NFL player, not a project, like that dude can actually play. How much benefit does that kind of provide the stars like Bosa and Armstead and guys like that, that they can just be fresh?
Yeah, it's nice, man, to go from having to play 80% of snaps to 60% of snaps. Like, we're talking, like, what's that, 4 fresh third downs that you get to rush the passer? Or when you can put these guys on the field and know that you're not having that much of a drop off, you can still call your plays. Like, you don't have to. A lot of times when you put in backups, you know, you get more vanilla as a play caller because you don't trust that they'll be able to run the same type of stunts or just to be able to handle whatever it is that you're calling. And that's just not the case. And that's why they're able to have as much success as they are. You mentioned, like, all those names. a lot of those names are starters in the NFL. Like Arden Key, based on this season alone, would start on pretty much every other team. I'm very confident in that. Samson Ebukam,
Maurice Hurst was a starter.
Already
was a starter.
And he's like struggling to break the lineup just because of like the ascension of Arik Armstead. But yeah, just to your point, the depth is insane and the depth covers up so much, so many glaring weaknesses in the secondary. And they were playing the majority of the season with Ambry Thomas, who, you know, didn't play football in 2020. And pretty much Kyle Shanahan said, I didn't expect him to be a player based on what I saw in training camp. And now he's their starter. They're playing with 33-year-old Josh Norman at cornerback, who they signed off the street. You're not able to do that with the type of dogs that they have up front. And yeah, it just seems like they're all winning constantly. And again, like their level of physicality is just unlike anything I've ever seen. And that is why, you know, if you are going to bet on the 49ers, if you're confident that this game will be close, it'll be because their defensive line is able to get after the backers. Because I mean, what they did to the Rams, what they did to the Cowboys was just dominant from start to finish.
Yeah. And I think Green Bay kind of got lucky in that first matchup. I mean, Josh Nyman was starting at left tackle, and that was really before he had kind of taken a few steps up. You know, Nyman, who might play this week with David Bakhtiari, you know, depending on what his situation is like. Nyman's gotten better down the stretch, but, you know, they were using Aaron Jones to chip, you know, Nick Bosa. They were using Robert Tonyan to flat back him just so he wasn't one-on-one, and they were able to survive, frankly. And that's kind of crazy because this offensive line is way healthier than they were, you know, when they faced the San Francisco 49ers the first time around. These linebackers are like kind of the X factor on defense, and having three actual like NFL linebackers is very refreshing in the landscape of the league right now, where most teams have one, right? Very few teams have two that they can just rely on a nickel. And San Francisco is in a spot where if you go heavy, they have three dudes who can match it. And if you want to go light, they have two dudes who can match it. And the fact that, you know, like you said, Aziz Alshire and Dre Greenlaw can be kind of those other guys to your Fred Warner is nuts. It's nuts.
So those two, they were rotating both of them last game because Alshire and Greenlaw both had missed time. I think Alshire is better just because, I mean, if you watch the Rams game, the safety, Jaquiski Tartan, even Fred Warner, they were telling Dre Greenlaw what to do like every other snap. It looked like he has no idea what he's doing out there, but he was out for a while, so I cut him some slack there. But as far as coverage goes, all three can run. And when you can turn and run with when you can carry number three up the field, you're able to do so much more on defense. And not even that, the sideline to sideline speed that they have. So like those stretch plays that a lot of teams love to run, that doesn't work against this team because they can cover so much ground. And that's why they've been the best run defense and pretty comfortably over the second half of the season.
That's what worries me as like the game deciding play, where it's like Greenlaw or Alshire or Warner across the middle interception on like Alan Lazard when Rodgers thinks that he has it open because he doesn't face three linebackers who move like that at the same time, you know? It's hard to rep those type of things. I know they were saying Trey Lance is practice squad quarterback Aaron Rodgers this week. I thought that was funny. Because, yeah, I mean, who else is going to – Jimmy's not going to do it. Like, that doesn't really make sense. Secondary-wise, how worried are you about these corners? I know you talked about K-1 kind of being a limited guy a little bit in the slot, Josh Norman being a billion years old and having a punter complete a pass on him, embarrassing fashion in a playoff game. And then Ambry Thomas kind of being that sort of surprise. But how do you feel about these guys? Because I feel like that's been the weakness of the Niners this whole season, right?
Oh, 100%. So Ambry Thomas has come on strong lately, and he's been playing with a lot of confidence. Obviously, you know, when you are confident as a cornerback, you know, good things happen. But it seems like he does have a bone bruise in his knee, so he's been listed as questionable too. And that's like the real scare. So if he can't go, that means Josh Norman has to play. And that's not what you want against anybody. I don't care if it's Alan Lazard, definitely not Davante Adams. But also they have Dante Johnson, who's their veteran guy, who's really just, you know, a veteran who's been all around. He's like your utility guy, I guess is the best way to put it. So you're comfortable with playing him in spurts, but there's no way that you want him starting, especially against the divisional round game, especially when the other quarterback is Aaron Rodgers. Emmanuel Moses has been outstanding, and I think he's really, really good. I think he has a chance to make some money, but outside of him, there's not really a guy, you know, if Ambry Thomas isn't 100% that I would trust. So yeah, I would be worried. And that is the thing you do worry about. Even when they are healthy, like Ambry Thomas, he struggles to play the ball down the field. And you know Rodgers is going to give his guys a chance down the field. So yeah, that's definitely the hope is, you know, the pass rush gets there and you don't have to, you can sit back with seven and get pressure with four.
On the Green Bay Packers side, they made a really weird move this week. I don't know if you caught it. They waived Kingsley Kiki. And Kingsley Kiki was picked up off waivers for the Houston Texans, who don't have a head coach right now. So it's kind of weird that you're picking up guys off of waivers. But it won't be effective until the end of the year. So he won't officially be a Texan, I think, until the next league year starts. Kiki had basically been their third defensive lineman, you know, as a 3-4 front. So he starts about half the games, you know, on paper, but he plays 40-plus, you know, snaps per game as an interior guy. He was ruled out after a healthy week of practice on Christmas. That was very weird. They came back and said, you know, it's kind of a personal matter. We don't want to talk about it. Okay. He ends up on the COVID list. So he goes on the COVID list, comes off the COVID list. Week 18 comes around. He's healthy enough to practice and stuff. They rule him out of the game with an illness. You're like, okay. And then bye week comes around. He's practicing Monday of divisional week. He's practicing. And then they just waive the guy. So we haven't really seen this guy since Christmas. There's some stuff I think we should give room to breathe in that situation. Like when you hear, hey, guy randomly is healthy scratched around the holidays. You're like, ah, a lot of stuff could be happening there. This is also a guy who has had two pretty major concussions that have taken, you know, weeks to recover from. So I don't know what's happening there necessarily, but at the end of the day, what's going to happen is the Packers have Kenny Clark on, you know, as the nose tackle. Dean Lowry is going to be the second guy. And then it's like Tyler Lancaster, who's like the nosiest of nose tackles. Like this guy gets no penetration. And then TJ Slayton, who's a rookie, who's kind of like their high variance, very athletic, has conditioning issues type of nose tackle. So that's kind of their line. And that's it. They got four guys. They don't use Jack Heflin, who's been on the 53-man roster as a healthy scratch very often. Abdullah Anderson actually gets more playing time off of the practice squad than he does. And then at outside linebacker, you know, they have Preston Smith. They have Rashawn Gary. That's good. Jonathan Garvin, 229-pound Tipa Galea, not so much. So we'll see if on Friday they do end up activating Za'Darius Smith and Whitney Mercilus from the injured reserve. But if not, they're real light up front, and they only use two inside linebackers too. Obviously Devondre Campbell, first team all pro, he's having a great season. Chris Barnes, probably less great. He's probably like bottom, like top of the bottom third in percentile wise in terms of NFL starting inside linebackers. They did do some stuff with Oren Burks specifically against San Francisco, where they went into an actual 4-3 front. And I think with their lack of depth, you know, on the interior and on the edges, it might be worth looking into that when they're in base, but it's only something that they did against San Francisco. So I don't know if that's something they were flirting with and they ended up just throwing out of the playbook, or if that's something that's like game planned.
With the 49ers, when they're able to extend drives, and when they extend drives, when they're on these 7, 8, 9, 10 play drives, that's when they're able to get your second string guys in there. So right. They get you tired, they run down your throat, and all of a sudden, now you have to play your backups. And that's when Debo comes in, and that's when he runs around and gets a lot of yards. So I think that's a good point as far as having guys cleared. If the Packers don't have guys cleared, I would be worried. So my question for you is, knowing that the 49ers are going to live in base downs, or they're going to live in 12, 21 personnel, like that's what they do. There's been more 11 personnel as of late, but I feel like that's just emergence of what Juwan Jennings is able to do. Kyle Shanahan still wants to have a fullback and tight end on the field. So knowing that he's going to use all of the motion in the world, probably to get guys out of the box. And now the Packers, if they are in an odd front, and let's say there are five men on the line of scrimmage, and somebody motions in the backfield, and now they take one of your linebackers out. Now you have that 5-1 look, and you can get to the edge. And that's what I think, you know, the goal will be. So do you think we see that? And how do you think the Packers are going to defend them?
Yeah. So I would say the one big benefit is Devondre Campbell in that situation.
He's very good, by the way.
Very good. Very good. Even when they're a nickel, they go into 5-1 stuff, not necessarily like 4-2 stuff. So they'll play a lot of penny looks with they'll keep three defensive tackles out there, and the only inside backer is Devondre Campbell and nickel. And not a lot of teams play like that. Fangio does it a little bit, and guys from that tree do it a little bit, but it's not something you see often in the NFL. So I think their natural answer would be that, and just saying, you know, Devondre, you got to play sideline to sideline. And he's been making those plays every week other than I can't remember the opponent, but whatever week it was that he came off of the COVID list where he hadn't practiced in 10 days and he looked very rusty. That really killed Green Bay. But outside of that, every other, you know, opportunity he's had, he's looked great. I think structurally, if that is the plan for San Francisco, and there's no reason to not assume that it's the plan because it's Kyle Shanahan, I feel like right. We know what we're right. getting into at this point. All of those minus splits, which is like, you know, wide receivers into the formation, basically like really condensing the formations and stuff like that. The way Green Bay handled it the first time is we're in a too high structure. We're playing off quarters and we're just basically, you know, playing from 10 yards and we're dealing with motion that way. And I think their idea is going to be, you know, rally to the ball. We're not going to be playing too deep because we're not too worried about Jimmy Garoppolo's deep ball. And we're going to be, you know, fast to fill from downhill, whether it's cornerback or safety. And basically just kind of, you know, if you think about it as like a little umbrella, you have that umbrella that kind of starts at the 10 yard line and works its way down into the formation. So I would assume that that's what they're going to do, but we'll find out. I mean, it was a tight race the first time around in ways that I don't think people, if they weren't watching the all 22, really realized. Like that interception that we talked about that Jaire Alexander had, right? That was on a quarters beater and the Packers were in quarters. Like Kyle Shanahan called the perfect play for that situation and they just weren't able to get the ball. And, you know, Jaire Alexander made one of those all pro slash pro bowl type of plays, you know, that he's bound to make. So
do you remember in that game when there was another play that kind of was funky that nobody really talks about? So it was the fumble where Jimmy kind of throws it to this. It was almost like a lateral. Do you remember that play?
Yeah,
like that just kind of gets swept under the rug too. That happened as well. So there were so many plays in that game where, you know, the 49ers had a chance to come back, and obviously they didn't. They ended up retaking the lead, but the game script was so funky in that game where, yeah, you mentioned if you look at the final score or if you look at most of the game, I'm sure the win probability would say that Green Bay was in control for most of the game. But there are a lot of times where San Francisco, as always, just shot themselves in the foot, man.
Yeah, I want to talk about these DBs real quick, but this is going to be a dogfight of a game, Frank. Like, this is going to be a real good matchup, man. This is a heavyweight fight. Outside of, you know, Jimmy being hurt, playing in, you know, sub-zero weather, whatever, this should be a good fight up until the fourth quarter. If it doesn't spin out of control because of Garoppolo, this is going to be a fun game. Jaire Alexander is listed as questionable. He's been practicing all week. It sounds like he's going to play, but what they're going to end up doing is basically not playing him full time, which we'll see. We'll see what the score looks like if you decide at halftime. Like, Jaire, if we don't play you this full game, we might not have another game to play. So what are we saving you for? Eric Stokes has done very well. I think he's probably going to end up starting if Jaire does play. Rasul Douglas, it sounds like, is the guy that they might flirt with playing in the slot. He was the outside starter. Chandon Sullivan was their nickel for most of the year, but he might get phased out with, you know, the cornerback depth coming back. The Packers traditionally have played three safety dime, but now they're using Kevin King in that role, really since the Baltimore Ravens game where Mark Andrews started giving him trouble. And hey man, if Mark Andrews is giving you trouble, there's a guy named George Kittle and he's going to get the ball. So if you need a big body out there and you don't want Henry Black being the guy wrapping up and tackling, like, maybe you do put Kevin King out there, or maybe you do put, you know, Jaire or Rasul or someone like that on the inside. Safety-wise, Adrian Amos is great. He's everything you think of as an NFL safety. Darnell Savage can be in very good spots for interceptions and then drop them. Like, against Minnesota, he could have had four. He, like, dropped every single one of them. There's a couple times where, you know, quarterbacks are scrambling, and he's just not making any effort to get downhill. He's just waiting for him to come to him, and you're like, dang, man, because this is a guy who, you know, has cover. He has probably the highest coverage traits in the league, other than maybe Tyrann Mathieu at safety. And it's just not all the way put together yet. It just isn't.
So, big DB guy here. Love to watch defensive backs. And I think so highly of Darnell Savage. I'm glad you said that, because there are not a lot of people who do. And when I say that, I mean, if you're just talking about voting for all pro, you would see a bunch of names for safety, but you're not going to see the name Savage on there. And that's because of a lot of things you saw, but also it's because of the box score. Because of because those plays don't show up in the box score, these plays that are hitting him in the hands, by the way, and there are multiple plays that are hitting him in the hands, for whatever reason, he's just not finishing. But yeah, I think the world of him. And I think that he is a very good player, and I would be terrified of him being the one that's dropping in the box and being able to, you know, come from the other side of the field to the other, for Jimmy G.
Nate Tyson, my buddy Nate, we have decided that the film watcher criteria, like the bar to like pass, is your thoughts on Bobby Wagner, right? That's the film for 2021, where, you know, he's voted Pro Bowl, he had all pro votes, and everyone who watches film is like, this dude is done.
He can't
run.
Cooked.
He's done. He plays a very physical position. He did it very explosively and very large for a very long time. Like, there's no shame in saying he's done, but probably done. Let's get into special teams really quickly. Packers have been a mess. There's like a 10% chance, and it's random every time, that Bohorquez is just going to punt this thing like 20 yards out of bounds for no reason. Just shank it. Mason Crosby's had an up and down year. Wordle's been having a solid season after, I think, the first game. Bohorquez had some like weird operational issues with them. Crosby's been looking better recently. As far as the returners go, they won't say who's going to be returning the ball. Amari Rodgers has been pretty bad at returning punts all year. The problem was that I'm trying to find his name. David Moore was the guy who replaced him off the practice squad. He immediately, you know, he was signed on like a Thursday and then played on a Sunday and was the punt returner for the team off of the practice squad as a call-up. He has been protected. I would assume he's going to be called up again, but he had COVID in week 18, so he wasn't able to do that. Randall Cobb also caught one punt right before he ended up having that abdominal injury. So it's been like someone replaces Amari Rodgers, then that guy gets hurt, and now we're in a spot where they're all getting healthy again, and there's that big old question mark of like, is Amari going to muff, you know, a punt in a playoff game? And that scares me to death.
Yeah, so you talk about that, and all 49ers fans do is complain about the special teams, and for good reason. You saw Mike McCarthy got over on them on special teams, and that's all you need to know. But their punting team, their tackling on special teams is not good. So they're healthy, and I imagine that will have a lot, you know, of impact, a good impact for them. But when you look at the numbers, like Green Bay is like the only team that's worse than him in special teams, which is very tough to figure out, because if I were to give you a ballot and say, hey, who do you think the worst team is in special teams, especially for 49ers fans, they're going to tell you it's San Francisco, like to a man. There's nobody that would probably say anything but that. But it's interesting for you to hear you say that Green Bay is so poor in the same regard. So it sounds like both these teams are just trying not to lose the game on special teams. That way they can get the offensive defense back on the field.
Yeah, there was that Chicago game with Green Bay where the EPA said that basically Green Bay's special teams had cost them 16 points. Oof. And it's, you watch it and you're like, yeah, they did. They cost them, you know, three scores. Pandemic year coaching. I'm sure you coach high school football too. I'm sure you have crazy stories about pandemic year coaching.
Not great.
Spring of 2021. We played a team that didn't have enough players to play special teams. So we just made a decision of like, you go to the ref on fourth down and you say, hey, we're taking a punt here. It's going 40 yards. And you basically just walk the ball down the field. I feel like we should be able to do that in this game. Just neither team really wants to do it. The thing too about the Dallas Cowboys completing that punt on Josh Norman, San Francisco didn't even have any ambition to return that ball. Because they were in defense stay. They had their base defense out there, which is the craziest part. And you're like, dang, you guys had the defense out there and still allowed to pass. That's tough. Prediction-wise, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm torn on this because it's tough to bet against a defensive line who they're unblockable. And there's no real other way to put it. And the Cowboys have a good offensive line. And they made the Cowboys look like they don't have a good offensive line. They overwhelm the Rams. The Packers are a step up in class against, I mean, pretty much anybody you go against. But there's that Aaron Rodgers guy. And then there's Devontae Adams. And we know that because Thomas is, you know, banged up a little bit, I'm a little worried in that regard. And it really just comes down to the Jimmy coaster. They've been able to get away with a lot of his mistakes over the course of the season, and especially in his last two games. Like, they won the games, but that was in spite of the quarterback. And yes, he made plays down the stretch, but at the same time, they shouldn't be in a position for that. Like, they shouldn't have to overcome those mistakes. And because of that, I mean, every time I watch the Packers, when you make a mistake against Aaron Rodgers, you are going to pay for it. And it's not something that you're going to be able to get back later in the game. If you make a mistake, he's going to make you pay for it on the very next drive. And because of that, I don't think they're going to be in a position to just to win in that sense. So I think the Packers win. I think it'll be close. Obviously, if Jimmy just takes care of the ball, I love their chances, but I haven't seen enough. I haven't seen enough in that over the past month or so to think that that's going to happen. And that goes without, you know, all the special teams blunders, the mismatch on the outside of cornerback. There's going to be plays with, you know, obviously San Francisco struggled even when they don't turn the ball over. So, yeah, because of that, I'm a little worried. So I'm going Packers here. But I do think it's close. I do think six is high. That's the spread. It'll probably come down to 24-20, something like that is what I'd say.
I think that's fair. I think Devontae, you know, there not being a guy on the field that can cover Devontae. The Packers have an MVP guy versus Jimmy, who the second half of the game looked terrible against Dallas. This is the deepest defensive front going against the deepest offensive line, I think, in the league, and that should be a really fun matchup to watch. I think all of that is worth, and then, you know, Kenny Clark matching up on Brunskill, obviously. I think all of that is worth, like, 7 points. I would bet still on the game if it was 6.5, and it, you know, it's 6 right now. It opened up at 5.5, dropped down to 5, then jumped back up to 6. But I'm taking Green Bay here by a touchdown, and I think that's fair.
That's a lot. But again, if the 49ers have made several mistakes, and not just, you know, it's not just on Jimmy, they've had drop passes, they have penalties that they've had to overcome. There's a lot that's gone wrong. And
yeah, they looked as sloppy as the Cowboys in that game. Like, both of them looked like teams that were actively trying to lose. People were bringing up, you know, 28-3 and all that stuff, you know, midway through the game, which is never what you want to see as a fan of the Kyle Shanahan team. Kyle, go ahead and plug all your stuff.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, KP_show, a lot of Niner stuff. As we get into the offseason here, it'll be a lot of draft stuff, I imagine. So other than that, I'm on YouTube breaking this stuff down. Just type my name, Kyle Posey. Go to NinersNation.com so I can feed my family.
Yeah, and we host NFL University together on the SB Nation NFL Show Network. I think I'm going to be doing a lot of draft stuff for the national guys too. So if you want to hear draft takes, I mean, Kyle and I think we're probably both going to the combine the way that it's been talked about. And if you're trying to follow draft stuff, give it a listen, because that's probably where you're going to find it.